For South Carolina Public Radio, I'm Vince Colblugo. With personal protective equipment in short supply, researchers are coming up with ways to fill the gaps in stretched supplies. One Clemson researcher is developing new methods to clean and decontaminate medical masks that healthcare providers use. Mark Johnson is a professor of material science and engineering and director of the Clemson University Center for Advanced Manufacturing, and he joins me on the line. Dr. Johnson, how are you?
I'm very good, Vince. Thank you very much.
So what is it you're doing with N95 masks, and why did you start?
So like many people, we had to learn what an N95 mask was about 3 months ago as COVID wound up hitting. And find out very quickly, this is a very important piece of equipment that protects healthcare workers on the front lines in our hospitals and our medical facilities. These are the respirators that absorb 95% of the particulate matter, the viruses and things like that in the air, that the hospital workers would wind up breathing. And so it's a really critical element of our healthcare system. Another idea that came along is saying, hey, can we wind up taking the masks that we've got, and how do we safely and effectively decontaminate them so that the healthcare workers know that these particles, the virus particles, are small enough you can't see them just by looking at them. How do they know that they're safe? Is there even a possible way to do this? So one of the interesting things that wound up happening around South Carolina is actually the presidents of USC, Clemson, and MUSC got together and said, hey, we've got a group of pretty bright scientists. Why don't we wind up asking them a series of technical problems to wind up looking at? And this is one of them. And Martine LaBarge at Clemson is leading that effort and coordinating it, particularly looking at the mask issue. This is myself and a gentleman named Mike Matthews, who's down at the University of South Carolina. Started looking at this, and we thought, hey, is there a way to use something called supercritical CO2 to wind up cleaning these masks? So what we find very quickly is you can't just throw them in the washing machine and clean them. That actually degrades the functionality. So you needed a different solvent besides water to wind up cleaning that. So we started looking at the supercritical CO2 and liquid CO2 approaches. These are fluids that CO2, this is carbon dioxide, normally shows up as dry ice and just evaporates into the air. So it's essentially very, very high pressures that you could subject these masks to. And are they able to wind up then having the decontamination process? So we started doing research on that, connected with a number of companies that wind up making that equipment across the country through our various research networks, standing out some partnerships in that area, and actually starting to get some very positive results. There's a company called Cool Clean, for instance, in the Minneapolis area that is looking at liquid CO2 as a way to wind up decontaminating masks and showing some initial results on that. From that, we wound up taking it and saying, look, this is a global pandemic. We need to look at the global scientific community and say, what's going on elsewhere? So Mike and I took it on ourselves to really connect with other researchers around the country and wound up connecting up with two really important groups. One's called the N95 Decon Group that really was a set of scientists focused on really fact-based data and analysis around how you can decontaminate an N95 mask. The other group we wound up teaming up with is a group called MGB Partners. This is Massachusetts General Hospital and their Partners Innovation Group on that that's looking at COVID Innovation Group. And they, in fact, were fielding some early technologies for decontaminating masks. So we wound up connecting with both of those groups. And as a result, contributing to the research and development that was going on three specific areas of decontaminating masks that can have potential near-term impact. One of those is vaporized hydrogen peroxide. Another is ultraviolet C. So it's a type of ultraviolet light, but it's a very specific wavelengths inside of that. And the third area is the possibility is moist heat.
So you listed a few examples, but how does one clean an N95 mask?
So hydrogen peroxide vapor is basically you want to have a sealed room because hydrogen peroxide is not safe for human consumption. So you need to have essentially a sealed room. They wind up having elevated concentration of hydrogen peroxide in it. Now, the underlying chemical is the exact same hydrogen peroxide that's dissolved in water that's used for medicinal purposes at home. And it functions the same way when that hydrogen peroxide molecule winds up coming in contact with a virus, it deactivates that virus. That is, it destroys the structure of the virus so it's no longer active and able to be dangerous to people. You're basically decontaminating it. The challenge is the mask itself is designed so that nothing can get through it of very, very small particles other than air molecules. So essentially what you have to do is create a room that has a high concentration of the vapor itself in that room. And so there are a number of approaches to wind up doing it. I will say this is not something people should ever, ever, ever try at home because it can really cause some serious side effects as a result of it. However, in the proper medical setting and understanding the engineering and the science behind it, what it allows you to do is essentially expose that mask to a vapor for about 5 hours. The science has been done in terms of the virology experiments to see where you wind up having essentially a sixth order of magnitude. So that is 1 million times reduction in the concentration of virus particles that might be present, which is considered a decontamination process.
Yeah, that sounds like you need a lot of safety measures in place. Let me ask you, with a shortage of this type of mask, is this a permanent or long-term solution? And is there any number of times you can decontaminate it before you have to discard it?
Yeah, so that's the other really great question. The other issue that we've done is look at how many times you can decontaminate it, because it's not just the decontamination, but every time you have a chemical come in contact with that mask that it wasn't expecting to. These are solvents, essentially, as a chemical. It changes the chemical properties of the mask itself. And ultimately, you wind up having the degradation of what's called the fit and the filtration. So it's estimated that after 3 times, you should not reuse those masks. Now you would say, wow, only 3 times. Essentially, with this technology, you're able to triple the availability of masks that are out there. So it's an incredible impact if it can wind up being used widely. I will take as another note on this, something called the Defense Logistics Agency. You've heard about the Defense Production Act. Part of that is an organization called the Defense Logistics Agency that organizes supplies for the Department of Defense. It's actually given a support to Battelle, the company that's working on this, and saying, how do we make this system more widely available across the country? I believe it's something on the order of $400 million of resources to be able to provide these masks and to provide the cleaning of these masks for hospitals all across the country. Now, at the same time, hydrogen peroxide vapor is used in medical environments elsewhere. And so the engineers, and I think those are some of the heroes in this entire effort, are every one of our hospitals has a engineering and supply office. And they can wind up going in because they've got the know-how to set up a system like this. And how do you actually modify your existing equipment, put it in a safe environment, so then you can wind up utilizing it yourself. And so there's a range of capabilities that are out there. I talk to the people on a daily basis that are in those sort of physical plant situations, both here in South Carolina and across the country. And they really are doing everything they can to make sure those healthcare workers have the safe supplies and are secure in being able to deliver the healthcare services that we're needing at this time.
Are these processes that can be adapted outside of healthcare? You know, could you adapt this across industries?
Absolutely. Anyone that's got, let's start out with people that have been on the job at this point. We've been worried about the healthcare workers, but there are a number of people that up till this point have been considered essential workers. They need protection because if it's an essential service and product, it means it's important for us as society. And so that's sort of the backbone of how we work. Any way we can give them additional support is great. And so there's going to be an increased need until we wind up getting to the point where there's a vaccine or a way to wind up addressing this pandemic in the long run. So I only see sort of an increasing need for personal protective equipment. And then beyond the time where you have a pandemic here, for instance, the company in Minneapolis, the reason we reached out to them, they had a research grant already that I believe was from the Department of Homeland Security, looking at the liquid CO2 as a way to clean personal protective gear for firefighters. You know, every day they're going into buildings that environment afterwards, they need to clean all their equipment up and make it safe for them to use it again. And so that's why the CO2 approach we were looking at to begin with, we were so optimistic about it. connecting that back with the medical environment is part of the research we wind up needing to do to make sure it can wind up working safely in this environment.
Changing it up, how is coronavirus impacting manufacturers?
Well, I mean, clearly when you wind up having an OEM, that is the original equipment manufacturer, let's say an automaker or an airplane maker, wind up scaling back their manufacturing, that doesn't just affect that plant, it affects all the entire supply chain. And I think that's one of the things that we really wind up seeing come to the fore at a time like this, is that the manufacturing, advanced manufacturing community here in South Carolina consists of both those OEM manufacturers, the BMWs, the GEs, the Boeing, the Samsung, as well as every small company in the area that's manufacturing componentry, manufacturing tooling. Companies that are service providers in the area that are only exist because they're in the manufacturing economy, that calibrate robots, provide maintenance equipment, and all those sort of services. So it's going to take a while to make sure that entire supply chain comes back up, and comes back up as quickly as possible, but also comes back in a measured pace, right? In a way that winds up meeting market demand. Clearly, this has been a disruption on the economy. I don't think anybody knows exactly the nature of that disruption. So you want to wind up being really cautious on that, but at the same time, making this as an opportunity to say, how do we really bring back the company the way we want that company to be in the long run? Bringing back that manufacturing the way we want it to be in the long run. So I think the other part of the manufacturing, I talked already about all the engineers in the hospitals. The other group that I think has done a terrific job on this is how so many manufacturers here in the upstate and across the country have pivoted their manufacturing to make things that range everything from disinfectant and hand sanitizers to making it where you can wind up making ventilators, making the components that go into the ventilators, to wind up pitching in to wind up addressing this problem. What this points out is every time you wind up having a crisis, there is an opportunity for innovation. I think at the end of the day, that's what we're going to wind up seeing as the lesson of this in the long run. This is going to be a change. The question every manufacturer has to ask itself is, am I coming back stronger or not? And I think that's the goal that you want to wind up getting to.
Do you think some manufacturers might think about coming back leaner?
I think more productive is the way I wind up looking at it. So leaner, often people look at it and say, oh, how do I, how do I wind up making it so I'm less dependent on my people? In fact, what you wind up finding is when you have more technology, it actually employs more people, provides higher pay, and it shows the importance of all those what's called knowledge workers out there. And everyone's a knowledge worker in an advanced manufacturing facility, from the person who's the CEO to the person who's actually, running the maintenance and operations of the facility. You know, it, just as a side note, looking at this advanced manufacturing area and the importance of people on it, I was recently talking to someone down in Charleston area about the job they had, and they took a job in advanced manufacturing, and they were in charge of maintenance. And he said, he thought, wow, this is going to be kind of boring, is the first thought. But what he found out right away was, as soon as a piece of equipment stopped working, his words were, he was the hero. He's the person who walks out there and takes care of the problem, winds up solving that issue, and he or she are able to wind up actually keeping the facility going. So I think what you find is you actually have more dependence on the people that are out there. Now, do I think companies will wind up being leaner in the sense that they'll be more productive? Absolutely. I think that's the goal everybody should have here. You look at it and say, the world is going to wind up changing. How can you be both smart, safe, and more productive out there?
Would it be better to say that manufacturers might bring in more knowledge workers, as you've described?
This is the thing about advanced manufacturing. You actually have more people. Your knowledge workers are the people that are on the floor. They are the people that are working directly with the product out there. You're actually giving them the tools and the capabilities to do this. This is not a situation where someone sits in a nice shiny office tower in Silicon Valley and winds up then just pushing the code out and saying, oh, let my manufacturer do this. If you're going to be productive in manufacturing, you have to have those two things right with each other. So you need to figure out how to do that in a way that's safe, in a way that's secure. Technology can actually help us do that. How do you wind up actually understanding where the capabilities are within the machines so that the machines and the people work safely and effectively with each other? and not saying this is some sort of trade-off between the two. I think that if it's a foolish mission for any manufacturer to say, oh, I will just keep my engineers out of the production floor, they don't need to be there constantly. However, they absolutely need to be connected to it. That is absolutely the lesson of 25 years of manufacturing innovation on automation. And looking at this is an area where actually South Carolina is extremely productive at this and extremely effective at this.
So what do manufacturers, I'm talking about the OEMs and the guys further down the supply chain, what do they have to think about as far as getting people to and from the workplace and minimizing the potential impact of COVID-19 in the workplace?
And so I think almost every industry, whether it's manufacturing or others, it's been identified testing, right? So we need to have increased testing overall to make sure that when someone is sick, we're able to wind up tracing them, we're able to wind up understanding who they've been in contact with, and making sure that we're not spreading disease further, the virus further around the country. Having said all of that, coming in, simple measures. I take my temperature every morning when I wake up and when I go to bed and track it. That's fine. If you have a temperature, stay home. Sharing that with your workers, that's an important thing to wind up doing, not just to take care of themselves, but to take care of everyone else around them, because it does no one any good to have it where you have this widespread sharing of virus across the across any production facility. So having that sort of activity, little things inside of every business, people are going to have to rethink a little bit. Say, okay, do we wind up setting it up where we have a lunchroom where everyone comes together at exactly the same time with coffee breaks exactly at the same time? And so you have these congregations of people. Or you say, we can wind up staggering people a little bit more, thinking how that works into the flow of your business. Can you wind up having workflow where people walk into and out of an area, wind up being rethought a little bit so that they are, if they happen to be contagious at any given point, they're not spreading a virus to the people that are standing there doing their work as they wind up passing them. So it's the kind of little things like that I think will make a huge difference out there and make it possible for us to get a productive economy and continue to have growing our productive economy here and really getting back to work.
Is there anything I haven't brought up that you think is important to mention?
No, I think the main message is, let's be safe, let's be smart, let's be productive. When we're getting back to work here, I think people can wind up using common sense, continue in your daily lives to wind up keeping that sort of social distancing out there and, getting back to work so that our economy can wind up growing is an important issue. And working together between all of the people in the manufacturing economy and all the service economy, we can wind up getting there together.
Dr. Johnson, thanks for joining me.
All right. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
For South Carolina Public Radio, I'm Vince Cole Blugo in Columbia.